by the Commissioner of Transportation versus Elbert and others. Council, just so that we know you are present, if you could say a few words, then the voice-activated video system will show your faces to us.
If it please the court, I'm Harold Frederick, the attorney for the appellant in this case.
All right, and if we can hear a few words, thank you, Mr. Frederick, if we can hear a few words from the respondent so we can make sure the video is working in that direction as well.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Matthew Furchi here on behalf of the respondent, the Commissioner of Transportation.
Excellent. We see you both. Just a quick reminder of our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your arguments with an additional 5 minutes allotted to the appellant's counsel if you choose to use that time for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument because we do keep track of the audio, arguments by audio recording. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, counsel, my name is Harold Frederick. I'm an attorney at the Freiberger Law Firm in Duluth, and our firm represents the Elberts, the appellants in this case. We're getting an echo for, you've all been up on the North Shore in front of the Elbert property. It's located miles.
Did you say you're having difficulty because you have an echo? Did I understand that correctly?
We have a serious echo, yes.
I wonder if there's a way you can turn your, we don't have that echo here. I wonder if you can turn the volume down on your speaker, if that would help. Sometimes that creates a reverberating effect.
I'll just continue then, we'll see how it goes. You've all been up the North Shore past the Elbert property. It's 71 acres above the highway, 43 acres below the highway. The MnDOT appraiser describes it as one of the last large remaining parcels on the North Shore that has Lake Superior frontage. The taking, I want to describe the taking here. MnDOT took permanent and temporary easements across the entire front of the Elbert property on the upper side and nearly all of the property on the lower side. What MnDOT planned to do was cut down the trees on the easement, use the easement for extra space to rebuild the roadway and regrade the area of the easement from one end to the other to establish a safe runoff slope.
Well, Mr. Frederick, we're familiar with the facts. Can I, if I could jump you into some of the detail of your argument, I have a big picture question. Are the alleged lost access damages the same as the construction interference damages that your client alleges?
Well, it covers the same area, but they're not the same because the first argument, our most injurious use, fullest extent argument, would have, in our view, the court issue an order saying that the use of the easements has prevented the use of the remaining property as well as the use of the easements, and we simply go to the jury with instructions that they're to determine the length of the period of construction and the amount of damages that flow.
Am I correct that there was a single driveway to access the property from Highway 61?
That's true. Single access on the lower side.
All right. And what is the evidence that this driveway was closed at any point so as to prevent access during the project period?
Well, the point is that that's irrelevant and immaterial. Well, because
whether it's irrelevant and immaterial, I just want to get a sense as a matter of fact. Do you concede that there is no evidence that that driveway was ever closed during the project period?
Well, it may have been closed, but it's not a part of our case.
Do I understand your argument to be that because MnDOT could have caused an interference with the access to the property in the exercise of the state's dominion, even if there is no authority in the petition or the order or the contract between MnDOT and the contractor, or any actual evidence of the driveway being blocked to impede access, that it's this state's dominion over the easement during the project period that establishes a taking? Do I understand your argument to be that?
Well, it's not a taking. The interference is a taking. What we have here is you determine the damages as the date of the taking. At the date of taking, you do not know the intensity of use. You know how it's going to be used, but not the intensity. So over the course of the years, the court, in his role as enforcer of eminent domain, has determined that at the date of taking, you assume that the condemning authority will use the property in the most injurious manner as can reasonably be determined, some states to the utmost extent. And then, of course, there's Nichols, who combines both rules and essentially says utmost extent in most
Nichols,
injurious manner.
Nichols, am I correct? That's a treatise that is not the statute in Minnesota or the case law in Minnesota. That's an opinion of a commentator on the question of takings. Am I correct about that source?
Yes, but in Minnesota and all around the country, in Minnesota, as in the Strom case, when a new question comes up, the court relies heavily on Nichols for resolving the issue at hand. But in any case, Minnesota then has the full enjoyment rule that the district court judge described. MnDOT has the full enjoyment of the property, we say clearly during the period of construction.
Well, you say they have full, you say they have full enjoyment of the property, but there's a limitation in the petition for the easement, which is that the access shall remain open and shall throughout the entire construction or project period. So I gather you're asking us to assume that MnDOT acted beyond that restriction.
No, the taking order simply provides for the taking of permanent and temporary easements. The law is that at the date of taking, it's necessary to assume that the condemning authority will use the property in the most injurious manner as can reasonably be determined.
But doesn't that interference
is a taking.
Well, doesn't that really go to compensation and damages? Isn't the real issue here what's within the scope of the taking? And as I understand it, the district court said, look, the right of access is a distinct right, and that wasn't in the petition or the order, so it's not within the scope of taking. So we don't get to these issues of how we look at compensation. So tell me where I'm wrong about that.
You're wrong because the interference is a taking. If you look at what the district court judge did in the construction interference case, the interference is under the Constitution compensable. The interference is compensable, and it doesn't need to be in the taking order.
But doesn't the interference...
What the court took was temporary easements across the entire frontage of the property. And what's involved is determining the damages that flow from the taking of the easement. And in determining the damages that flow from the taking of the easement, it's assumed at the date of taking that the condemning authority will use the rights acquired in the manner most injurious to the property owner. That's an interference. That interference is a taking.
If I may, let me explain the way I was thinking about this, and then you could perhaps, set me straight, since you know the record is better than I do in this case. I understood that when we're talking about construction interference damages, then we look at, well, what happened during the course of this easement, of when this easement was there and when the construction was taking place, as opposed to if something is within the right of access, where if they took the right of access, then you'd be looking and saying, okay, we're going to measure that at the time of taking and assume that they fully exercise their right of that right. But where am I wrong?
Well, I think you're missing my point. My point is that they took easements across the entire front of the property.
But as I understood it, they didn't take that right of reasonable or convenient access that as part of those easements.
They were silent in that regard.
They were silent. And that's why I get back to, aren't we talking about what's in the scope of the taking?
No, no. What's in the scope of the taking is the taking of easements across the entire frontage of the property. The task of the court is to determine the damages that flow from the taking of the easement. The mechanism for determining the damages is to go to the date of taking and assume, under established law across America, that the condemning authority will use the rights it has, use the easement to the fullest extent. In Wisconsin, as late as 2013, the court adopted the most injurious rule. The most injurious, think of what's the most injurious thing that the MnDOT can do. They can use the easement to the full extent, and the property owner can't get across the easement and access the property, and that's a taking. That interference is a taking.
But your argument that the property owner can't get across to the property assumes that there was that the access in the driveway did not remain open. I help me to understand. Maybe I'm just misunderstanding your argument.
It's irrelevant that the driveway remained open. We go back to the date of taking to determine the damages. We don't know how the driveway is going to be interfered with.
But we know that the extent of the taking that's allowed by law in the court's order does not expressly prohibits the closing of the driveway. So if we're making assumptions about what's going to happen at the time of the taking, why isn't that the assumption that the law is going to be followed?
The taking order does not provide for maintaining the driveway. The taking order deals with the taking of temporary easements across the front of the property.
Now the petition
does. If
they had
put a provision.
Doesn't the petition?
If they had put a provision.
I'm sorry. Doesn't the petition on which the order is based provide for the exclusion that I'm referring to, which is the maintaining of the opening of the driveway?
No, it does not so provide.
So
the MnDOT took easements across the front of the property. You go to the date of taking, you assume that they're going to use the rights acquired in the most injurious manner, and therefore they've interfered with our right to use the easement and get across the easement to the remainder property.
Has Minnesota adopted this most injurious rule?
No, they haven't adopted the most injurious rule, but the court usually looks to Nichols. And in Minnesota, the property owner may only use the easement in a manner which will not interfere with the full enjoyment of the easement by the state of Minnesota. Now then go to what the word full means. And I've got this in the brief. Full enjoyment means that there's no enjoyment left over. If MnDOT has full enjoyment of the surface, then there is no remaining enjoyment. Full means full. Look at the dictionary definition of full. So they have full enjoyment under the Minnesota rule, but the better rule is the Nichols rule and what the courts have done around the country for 100 years.
So,
but even with full enjoyment.
If I may ask a question here, doesn't this part of your argument rest upon the assumption that the temporary easement MnDOT took included a taking of the right of reasonable and convenient access to 61?
No, it does not. We're measuring the damages that flow from what they did take, not that which they did not take. They took the easements, members of the court. Your job is to go back to the data taking, assume that the property will be used by MnDOT to the fullest enjoyment in Minnesota, full enjoyment. And if they have full enjoyment, there's nothing else left. As a practical matter, they need full enjoyment. They can't be working on this road with someone come along building driveways, which is our bone of contention here. Their enjoyment is inconsistent with our right to build our driveways to get onto our property. It's a matter of physics. They need it as a safety matter. They have full enjoyment of the surface. Now, the tunnel case is different because that didn't involve the surface. The court said the holder of the easement has the right to put a tunnel under the property. But this is surface we're talking about, full enjoyment of the surface. That's the contention that we have in this case. And then I've got some language in my notes here about what full means. Full means full. Full utilization means no other utilization is available. Full enjoyment means full enjoyment. No other enjoyment is available. That's what our case is involved. Look at the Kentucky Fried Chicken case. That's the case that's on all fours with our case here, where they took easements for 2 years across the entire front of the property. And the court said, well, sure, you ordinarily have the right of access, but you took temporary easements across every inch of the frontage of the property. And that means that applying a sensible rule, whether it's most injurious or full enjoyment, full means full, and there's no enjoyment or there's no residual right left over for the property owner. So then what the expert advisor to real estate appraiser says, that's my J.D. Eaton quote, if the existence of the easement will affect the value of the unencumbered land as well as the easement area, this fact must be considered in estimating the value of the property after the taking. You have to look at the ability of MnDOT to fully enjoy the use of the easement to build their property. They're going to regrade our easement from one end to the other to adopt a safe slope, and we're not going to be able to enjoy any part of the easement, and therefore we're not going to be able to build our driveways and get to the remainder. It's a simple matter. What the court has said in Minnesota in ENDA is that the court is the enforcer of the right of just compensation. There's no one else to do the job. That's why we have the most injurious rule. That's why Nichols announced his rule. That's why full enjoyment means that there's no enjoyment left over.
Thank you. I believe your time has expired. You will have an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Matthew Furchi, and I am here on behalf of the respondent in this case, the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Before I get into my argument, I do want to make sure the court is clear on the record and the petition and order authorizing the taking in this case. I know, Judge Ross, you had some questions about the preservation of access. The petition and the order makes no reference to access. It sets forth the taking of the permanent and temporary easements. There is no taking of access in the petition or the order, but neither is there a reservation of access in those documents.
Thank you.
However, given that there is no taking of the right of reasonably convenient and suitable access in this case, the project contract here did include in its special provisions the requirement that the contractor maintain reasonable and adequate access at all times throughout the project.
I think the contract says right to reasonable access to residences and businesses. Am I correct that these lots include no residences and businesses, or am I misunderstanding the lots?
I believe there was one residence on the south side or the east side of the property, but that would be encompassed within the special provision, which is section S33.2. So the contractor was obligated to maintain access to this driveway entrance throughout the course of the project, and that's established in the transcript for the commissioner's hearing as well. So on those basis that the right of access was not acquired, the district court correctly applied Minnesota's longstanding eminent domain precedent to the undisputed material facts in this record to exclude the $305,000 in alleged lost access damages. First, because MnDOT did not acquire the right of access, and the right of access is clearly and well established a distinct legal property right in the state of Minnesota. And second, there are no construction-related interference severance damages consistent with Minnesota law, including the state v. Strom case, that are presented in the record in this case. First, Minnesota law requires that any taking of a property right be determined by the court and specified in an order prior to claiming damages for the taking. There is no order authorizing any taking of the right of access in this case, permanent or temporary. In order for appellants to claim damages for lost or destroyed access, they have to demonstrate and prove to the court that there was a taking. They have to show that an access was blocked or that it rose to the level of an unreasonable denial of access during the project. Here, as referenced throughout appellant's briefing, all that is requested of this court is that it rule as a matter of law that access across the easement would not be available. The argument is that because MnDOT owns easement across the frontage of the property, which expands the right-of-way for the project, the court must assume that there would be no access to the property through the project or temporary easements. Now, there's a major problem here with the argument that full enjoyment of MnDOT for the road and for the easements somehow deprives appellants of access just by virtue of owning the easements, because public road authorities necessarily own the right-of-way for highways and roads throughout the state. To the fullest extent, they have full enjoyment of the highway. If it's true that then that somehow destroys the ability of abutting landowners to access the highway because they own the fee interest or permanent easement interest to these highways, there wouldn't be a right of access recognized in the state of Minnesota at all unless it was specifically granted. And that's just not the case. It is well settled, if you look at the Johnson versus City of Plymouth case, the Hendrickson case, that the right of access is well established in this state and that it is in the nature of a property right.
In other words, you're suggesting, if I understand you correct me if this is an oversimplification of paraphrasing your point, but that the state's full enjoyment of an easement all along the property line does not necessarily exclude the landowner's right to access sort of a shared use of the space, even though the state has the easement for the purposes of its construction project.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in the instrument of condemnation here, the petition and the order granting petition, there is no taking of access or authorized interference or taking of the access that rises to a compensable taking in this case. If you look at the Larson case that talks about what is included in an easement, and it talks about the authorized uses of the land that are included in the terms of the easement. Well, the easements acquired here, the temporary and permanent easements, do not authorize a deprivation of access to appellant's property throughout the course of the project. Indeed, it had to be maintained, and there's nothing in this record that shows that access was ever closed. And there were never any complaints to MnDOT that they were not able to utilize access to the property.
Can you address the argument, the most injurious rule, and whether that's adopted in Minnesota, and whether it is implied in Minnesota by the full use doctrine in Minnesota?
Certainly, Your Honors. The most injurious standard that's being advocated by appellants in this case has not, to my knowledge, or there's nothing that's been briefed that says this has been adopted by Minnesota, and indeed it would be inconsistent with the robust and well-established case law that addresses access rights in Minnesota. The Kentucky Fried Chicken case, which appellants and much of the Nichols treatise discussion of the most injurious method that appellants rely upon, talks about looking to the four corners of the condemnation instrument. And in that case, they say that because they could have somehow destroyed the right of access, then it must be assumed by the most injurious method to be destroyed. But in Minnesota, we do not assume implicit takings of distinct legal property rights just by virtue of use of the easement. We require that landowners prove that if there is interference, if there is a denial of access, it must rise to the level of a taking and it must be adjudicated by the court and included in an order. It would be a very difficult property rights regime in this state if we were able to take a temporary easement and get the rights of access just thrown in there, that they're assumed to be taken or implicitly taken. We require that it be memorialized in an order so that the public road authorities get what they're paying for and landowners are protected and they don't lose rights that aren't described in a petition or an order.
What about the practical argument of Mr. Frederick that while the state is occupying this temporary easement and completing its constructions, that the landowner couldn't do such things as install a driveway, for example, while the state is involved in its project?
Your Honors, that is just a general assertion. There's nothing in this record that says appellants applied for a driveway permit or that they would have been denied a driveway permit in the project. I believe at the transcript for the commissioner's hearing on this case, prior to the getting to the district court appeal from the commissioner's orders, there is testimony that developers routinely try to use the project as an opportunity to make some changes in driveways, and MnDOT tries to accommodate that. But at least for purposes of this case, there is nothing in the record that says that appellants would have been denied a driveway permit or had been denied the right to build that driveway, change that driveway, or otherwise do something to alter their access or change it by request of the landowners. That's not in this record. It's not this case.
So when I was reading appellant's brief, one of the things that, you know, caught my eye was this. They made the point that the Hendrickson case, the Dale property cases that you rely upon, weren't cases where the state had brought a condemnation action, but were the traditional inverse condemnation cases. And so that here, where this MnDOT was bringing the petition, you know, and was being ordered to have the easement, shouldn't then the right of access and how that impacted the easement, you know, be kind of part of the damages that in the commissioner's hearing and the district court should be able to consider? I mean, if nothing else, as a matter of judicial economy, why should they have to go bring a separate action rather than having it sorted out all in one? Would you please address that?
Yes, Your Honor. And while this is a case that was initiated by the state, that there's a petition, this is a petition for condemnation, the right of access is not included in that. And Minnesota still requires that if additional property rights are to be included as a matter of judicial economy, they have to still be established by order. You look at the Hilgers case and the McAndrews case.
So if you could explain to me what then from your perspective should the petitioners have done to have to clarify whether or not the right of reasonable and convenient access was part of these easements?
So to be consistent with the requirements in Minnesota case law, including Hilders and McAndrews, the appellants should have brought a motion to expand the taking to include the right of reasonably convenient and suitable access if, as their position is, access was lost or destroyed, even temporarily, for a total destruction of access. They should have brought a motion to expand the taking. And that is exactly what these same appellants had done the last time we were here at the Court of Appeals on this very condemnation. They sought a motion to expand the taking to include additional right-of-way. So this is a procedure that's available, and they knew that it was out there. Now, if during the course of a project and after a commissioner's hearing, after the Hilders and McAndrews requires that these motions be brought prior to the commissioner's hearing. But if events occur during the project that somehow do give rise to a potential claim for a taking of access, there is still a remedy available. They can bring a mandamus action for inverse condemnation and prove up that, hey, MnDOT stacked a bunch of stuff in front of the driveway and we were blocked here for a month or whatever it is. But they still must prove and prove their case that there was a taking of access. Now, alternatively, I think appellants try to raise this case construction-related interference severance damages. But there's no evidence in this record of any construction-related interference severance damages either. Appellants attempt to claim damages for general project damages occurring on the existing right-of-way and all up and down the full length of the project. And those sorts of general uncertainty project damages are not permissible claims in eminent domain proceedings in Minnesota. Blaine Building clearly states that construction-related interference damages must arise from changes within the land taken, not within pre-existing right-of-way, and not all up and down the full length of the project, as appellants are seeking here as an apparent alternative basis to claim the lost or destroyed access damages, the $305,000 at issue here. Damages, even under Strom, are not permissible for speculation or hypothetical non-existent property damages. Uncertainty, general inconvenience, is not a basis to award damages. We don't just assume, even under Strom, that access has been lost or interfered with. Those damages must be proven, and the landowner bears the burden under Minnesota case law to prove those damages. We don't just assume takings. We don't just assume damages. I think if you look at the Strom case, you'll see the distinction here. In the record in this case, there isn't a single instance claimed that the driveway was blocked or that access was interfered with. In Strom, there were stipulated facts as to changes in access. Their language was used in the case that access was seriously disrupted, and that the access openings or the means to access the Woodbridge property in Strom changed many times throughout the course of the project. There's nothing in the record here that indicates any of that ever occurred. So we have a factual distinction here, and we are on summary judgment, and there's nothing in the record in the material facts that support a claim for access construction-related interference in this case that's analogous to or consistent with the Strom decision. I'd point the court more likely, there's a Supreme Court case, State v. Wyden, in which a landowner in that case wanted to claim a temporary elimination of access during the period of the project, but the court held there was nothing in the record that gave rise to those damages. And again, turned it back to if something were to happen at a future date and time and events were to transpire or use of the easements were to be such that access was fully deprived or eliminated, even on a temporary basis, they have a remedy, and that's mandamus and inverse condemnation. So the Wyden case is very analogous to the circumstances here. Finally, I see my time is running out, but I wanted to address that unlike in the most injurious standard cases from other states, no reservation of access was required in the petition or order in this case. The State v. Northwest Airlines case even stated from this court, such a reservation in the petition or order is beyond the requirements of case law because in Minnesota, the right of access is well established and robust, and if it's not taken explicitly, it is in an order, it is not taken at all. So this court should respectfully affirm the district court in this case.
Thank
you. I see my time's up, but there's no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Well, we now have the facts. There was no reservation in the taking order. There's simply a straightforward taking of the easement, and the property was vacant at the time of the taking. There's some old rundown cabins on the property that the record shows that our client used many years ago. Then the next point is, in connection with construction interferences, even in the Weckman case is the Court of Appeals case which limits the extent of the ordinary construction interference rule to damages that occurred on the taking of the easement. Here we have the trees cut down. We have the Minnesota Department of Transportation from one end to the other reshaping the easement. Even under Weckman, we have a case for construction interferences. The court missed that. MnDOT does not respond to it. So at least the case has got to go back to the trial court for a jury case on the construct and the question of construction interferences on the property taken. So that's our position with regard to construction interferences. And
just, just so I'm clear on the construction interference, you're asking us to apply a standard of law that assumes actual construction interference, even if there is no evidence of actual interference of access.
Well, there is evidence of interference. The MnDOT engineer said we had to take the trees down because we couldn't run our bulldozers up and down the easement with the trees in place, and we have to regrade the easement from one end to the other to get a safe slope. That's all in the record.
I understand
that. That's what they...
I'm talking about your access to the property, as I understand, that is the primary basis of your construction interference allegations. So I want to get a sense of whether you're asking us to assume, as a matter of law, that interference by the fact of the easement, and that you don't need to have actual evidence in the record of interference with access.
Construction interference, the rule even in the Weckman case is that if there's a change in the area of the easement as a part of the project and a reshaping of the easement, that's a construction interference. When these people were out there with their bulldozers and so forth, they were interfering in the construction of the highway. That's construction interference. Do you follow that?
I don't.
Okay, they're building the roadway. They're using the easement. We have to back up here. We're so missing one another in this case. Let's talk about highest and best use. Highest and best use is an in rem matter. It doesn't matter how the property is actually being used. You need to determine on an in rem basis the highest and best use. It doesn't make any difference that we weren't out at the property. My people could be in Spain. It just doesn't make any difference. This case is to be tried on highest and best use and what the MnDOT Department of Transportation had the right to do. They had the right to put their bulldozers on the property, to reshape the easement. All of that activity interfered with the use of the easements. We don't have to go up there and apply for a driveway permit because highest and best use is in rem. Has nothing to do with the fact that our client wasn't using the property. Just doesn't make any difference. It's an in rem proceeding, and highest and best use is not based on the fact that the Elberts weren't using the property. Highest and best use is highest and best use, and building a highway and reshaping the easement, the temporary easement. You know, they should have taken a permanent easement because they're going to reshape the property forevermore. And we could have brought an inverse condemnation action saying that they should expand their easement from a temporary to a permanent. But we don't need to do that. The sin here is the interference in our inability to get across the property. Doesn't make any difference that we weren't using it. Doesn't make any difference what happened. That's the gist of it from our point of view.
What do you make of, just one last question, Mr. Furchi's argument that your client having a full easement does not necessarily exclude the presumed right in Minnesota of the landowner to access the land?
Doesn't preclude the right of access except if easements are taken across the entire front of the property and the use of the easement interferes with our ability to get across the easement to access the property. That interference is a separate taking. Then one other point to be made, Your Honor.
Well, I think your time has expired, and I do believe we have the gist of your argument and your thorough briefing, and we appreciate your oral argument on the matter as well. And we appreciate both counsels in the presentation of this case. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.